explain what is a clock field and why it can be interesting for gravity. And then I will add also to say some words about renormalization group techniques, in particular just Vectoris equation, because renormalization group technique is pretty a wide topic and it's really hopeless to talk about that. So the idea is that if we want to construct a field theory from the classical gravitational action, we have the problem of ultraviolet data frequencies, which is something which is common to any quantum field theory, but the problem is particularly drastic in the case of, for instance, the Einstein-Hilbert action, because if we think of taking a perturbation approach to gravity, developing it around the free theory, we have that to cancel the infinities coming, the infinite quantities coming from the loop integral, we actually have to introduce an infinite number of counter terms. A possible approach to solve this problem is to include higher order terms, and this has been attempted something like 30 years ago or even more, which are not even forbidden in a classical sense, because when one first writes Einstein equation, there is some guesswork involved in it. And one just writes the most relevant terms. The problem with this higher derivative approach is that actually it fixes the ultraviolet divergences, because the higher derivative terms not only change the interaction part, but also change the propagator, adding higher powers of the momenta, but introduce new poles in the propagator, which are called ghosts, in the sense that they represent particles which are not expected to be there. And, it's not really proved that those ghosts spoil the unitarity of the theory, but for sure this is an unsatisfactory point of the higher derivative approach. And it is actually so unsatisfactory that people started looking for something different. A possible different approach is to really try to modify the propagator and to improve its ultraviolet behavior without introducing ghosts, and in a naive way, one could think to start from a propagator of this kind and go to a propagator with something of this form, for instance. Where one just add a space-like momentum to the propagator. This works in the sense that it improves the behavior for Z big enough and doesn't introduce any new ghost because you don't have any new pole from here. The thing that is unsatisfactory or at least strange is that this spoils Lorentz invariance of the theory. But of course, one could think of a scenario where Lorentz invariance is something which is true on our scales, and at very high energy scales is no longer true. So in principle, and that's really the central point of my work, in principle, one could consider such theories where Lorentz invariance is broken. And an interesting paper at the beginning of this year was proposed by Rama. The paper is, I'll give you the reference, but maybe you're already familiar with that. And this is the paper by Rama, where he proposes a theory which has this good behavior in the ultraviolet and can be seen as the regular general gravity, the one which we are used to in the infrared. And this is made by introducing a foliation structure which in the four-dimensional space, so let's say that the plane are the space like coordinates, and it picks a particular reference frame, a particular time direction, and splits the space into different leaves or foliation. Which represent constant time surfaces. In this way, not only it breaks Lorentz invariance, but it also fixes part of the gauge invariance of the theory, because now the gauge group of the theory is represented only by the diffeomorphisms which respect this foliation structure, so something which changes the coordinate in the R3, say, part, and rescale the time, but doesn't mix different needs of the foliation. What I want to introduce in some more detail is a formalism used by Germani and others, which basically shows that you don't have to reduce the symmetry group of the theory. You can have a fully covariant theory which has Lorentz breaking terms, and the Orawa theory is a special case of this kind of approach. So, the idea in this case is that this kind of propagator, or something which behaves like this propagator in ultraviolet, so I don't want to be really precise about the lower powers of the momenta, can be obtained by something of this form, for instance. By inserting here a modified matrix H mu nu, which actually is obtained by means of the usual metric and something which contains a timeline vector. And the aim of this projector term here is precisely to cancel the time-like components of the momenta in this bracket here, so that the time-like components are just doesn't have leaving terms in the momenta. The idea is that to do this trick, you have to put a vector-like a time-like vector field here, which has to be normalized so that it precisely cancels. For instance, if you think of a diagonal metric, it's kind of evident that you can cancel the P0 square term by normalizing opportunely this N mu vector field, and what you have to do is to assume that G mu nu N mu is equal to -1. And this actually defines the same foliation by saying that the foliation structure is actually something orthogonal in every point to this N vector field. So something of this kind, say. So in this way we can actually define a foliation. And another requirement that we have to put on this N vector field is it has to be irrotational, in the sense that we use it to define the reference frame at any point, and we don't want the reference frame to rotate along the time vector. A way, for instance, to satisfy this requirement is to say that N mu is actually up to a normalization, the gradient of the scalar field. And in this way, we see that each leaf of the foliation, which can be identified by a parameter which corresponds to the time, actually is just the set of points so that chi of x is equal to t. So actually chi can be really regarded as a clock field in the sense that it defines the time on our R4, for instance. Of course, this can be generalized to different topologies in principle, but we will stay just to this case in this discussion. And it turns out that actually one can rewrite, for instance, or other theory of this formula is in fact more general, and the kinetic term of Morava theory can be obtained by means of the derivative with respect to this time range vector of the matrix. So something, actually there are some constant factors, but I want just to give you the form of the operators and the function of the form d mu chi plus d mu d mu chi. Now, what actually we wanted to investigate is, suppose that we have a theory of this kind and that this theory has a solution which can be studied close to Minkowski space or more in general to a maximally symmetric space. And for instance, by means of an expansion around this space, other point expansion, say. The question is, what is the behavior of these extra terms related to the time-like vector field? Because we know that at our scale in the infrared ground distances, there is nothing like this, because we know that Einstein gravity works nicely. And to actually study this kind of issue, I have to talk a little bit about the normalization group equations and introduce actually something like the Vetterich equation, which can be used to study, to relate the size and the strength of the coupling at different momentum scale. So if we are able, through this equation, to see, for instance, that at very low momentum scale, this term would anyway disappear, we would find something consistent with our experience. On the other hand, if we had the same scenario, we would be led to believe that this kind of term cannot be inserted or is not likely to be inserted in a quantum theory of gravitation. So, yes, stop.
You got this theory from that second paper, or is this?
Yeah, it's from the Germanic paper.
Have you heard of Tevez, the tensor vector scalar?
Yeah, I mean, actually, it's a formulation in terms of the tensor vector scalar theory of Morava theory. This is the aim of Tevez's paper. Okay. I mean, it just shows explicitly how one can start from a Morava idea to put it in this formalism.
Just because it occurs to me that the vectors obey the exact same conditions that your rotational.
Yeah, in fact, one can think out from the normalization flow of this equation in the most general case, one can obtain something as complex as the Einstein-Itter theory, for instance.
So is there a connection to dark matter?
I don't know the answer to this question. Maybe you can.
If the calculations turn out to be right, there is a final contribution to the cosmological constant in this case, but not directly to dark matter.
I thought Tevez was meant to give Mon.
Yeah, but this was not the aim of our investigation.
We just looked at the infrared behavior of that coupling mostly, and what turns out is that it modifies the behavior of Newton constant and of the cosmological constant in a way that I will explain later, but we really concentrated just on that aspect of the problem. So the idea behind the vector equation is to start from the generating function and to modify I will always talk about the scalar field because the discussion is much simpler. I don't want to go into this formalism much more than this. So to modify this by considering a mass-like term which depends on some kind of regulator function. And the idea is that this regulator function, which can be seen as a function of the momenta, is something which is zero for large momenta. So for large momenta, the path integral is unchanged, at least the argument of the path integral is unchanged. And it is of scale k for low momenta. And at p equal k, this is the p axis, it has a sharpness. So the idea is that the low momentum mode will be shielded in this path integral by this regulator term. While, and from this formalism we can actually obtain by the Lejeune transformation, and I don't want to go into the details, we can obtain an effective action at the scale k. And this effective action for k equals zero will be just the usual quantum effective action. For k which goes to infinity, instead, we will have, in some sense, the bare action of the theory, in the sense that if we think of a very large k, this term becomes a mass-like infinite term, which puts this this path integral in a delta function form, which just returns the bare action. Even if the question is a bit subtle from a mathematical point of view, and there is a problem of changing limits actually in this, or putting an ultraviolet cutoff, but I don't want to go into the details of this, even if I will go back to the ultraviolet cutoff. Because the idea is that from not only we obtain this asymptotic behavior, but we also are able to actually find the crucial object of this discussion, which is a differential equation which relates the effective action at different momenta scales. R is the regulator again. Gamma 2 is the axiom of the action. And here, the regulator appears again. And what I want to remark about this equation is that from this equation one sees that RK acts as an ultraviolet cutoff, not only as an infrared one, because this equation actually is proportional to the derivative of RK, and the derivative of RK is something of this form, which is just P on the momentum scale K. So the contribution will be, the ultraviolet contribution at any K will be damped off by this term here. And the idea is that if we fix a theory space, which is some infinite dimensional space in principle, which depends on, for instance, the manifold and the kind of fields we are having and the symmetries. For instance, suppose that we are in R4, which we have the scalar field, and we have a Z2 symmetry. So we have all the kinetic term, the derivative term possible, and the even powers of the scalar field. In this theory space, we have actually, we can give as an initial condition the direction at k equal infinite. And we have that the quantum action that we reach under the normalization flow is completely determined by this equation. Of course, it is impractical, if not meaningless, to think of a theory space. So what we have to do is to consider a truncation and work with that truncation. For instance, for the scalar field dimension, we can assume that the scalar field doesn't change doesn't change too much, so that we keep just the dμ phi term, and that the strength of the field is not too big, so that we can stop, for instance, at the first interacting term, which is the lambda phi, and to obtain the lambda phi for model. So we can, for instance, in that case, have something of this form. Actually, it's a matter of picking an ansatz. It's a matter of picking an ansatz, which depends where the coupling depends on k. And we take the derivative of this action. So on the left hand side, we have the derivatives of the couplings. And by solving the right hand side, we obtain the beta function for the couplings. So from this kind of formula, we can find the beta function of the coupling, even if the problem is not at all trivial, because first we have to choose an appropriate truncation, and this is not trivial. And then there are several technical problems related to the inversion of this differential operator. Gamma 2 is a differential operator, RK is a differential operator. And sometimes the shape of the momentum cutoff can be chosen to simplify this equation, but not always actually. And also evaluating this trace for a gauge theory, for instance, for gravity, is a non-trivial problem. Because, of course, in that case, we would have, for instance, in gravity, covariant Laplacian, covariant derivatives, and the trace has to be evaluated, hopefully, in a background-independent way, or we have to choose carefully which background to use if for an expansion to be consistent with what we want to see. So the idea is that we can use actually this kind of equation to study the beta function. And let me just stress that something important about the beta function are the fixed points of the beta functions. So for instance, if one coupling, say the lambda coupling, has a fixed point of zero, so that we would have something of this form. Lambda k times something, so that for lambda k equals 0, this is actually a solution of the differential equation. We can study the stability of this fixed point, and if this fixed point is stable in the ultraviolet state, we will have that the greater the momentum scale, the smaller the coupling gets, because it is attracted towards the lambda equals zero fixed point by means of the renormalization flow. So this is the direction for increasing k. This is for instance the scenario in asymptotic freedom. On the other hand, if the fixed point is unstable, we have the converse, in the sense that it becomes attractive when we go to small momenta scale, and repulsive when we go to high momenta scale. So the language can be really just reversed if we look at the infrared or the ultraviolet. Another case which is worth mentioning is the case where the fixed point is for some finite values of the couplings, and it is, for instance, stable in the ultraviolet, so that, for instance, for increasing momentum, the theory will flow towards this fixed point. And this is actually the scenario of asymptotic safety. And this would mean that we have something, we can actually expand in perturbation the theory and normalize the theory around this fixed point and not around the free theory. But I just want to mention this, say, en passant. So the idea is that we can construct a theory from this kind of formulae, and actually the kinetic term that we can form and add to the Einstein-Hilbertson case, so we have something of the form Einstein-Hilbertson case. Plus, we can add several terms, and to be consistent in a truncation, if we start from the idea of putting this n new field, we have to add a lot of couplings. Of course, all the couplings depend on the momentum scale k. So we have something of the form na box na plus. D nu, and nu plus R mu, and nu plus and mu and nu and alpha D mu and alpha plus the constraint, which can be introduced as Lagrange multipliers or delta function, and we will have in this formalism this constraint on the norm of the vector field and also the constraint on the vorticity. So the constraint on the vorticity field should be d mu n mu equal to d nu n mu. And this theory, in principle, can be analyzed by means of that equation. But the computations are really so involved that it's almost hopeless to try to obtain a result in this scenario, also because the number of couplings really makes it really hard to understand what happens to the physics, because they are all related between themselves. So a possible approximation is to solve explicitly the constraint for the vorticity and just reason in terms of this scalar field, this clock field, plus the norm constraint. And in this case, we see that if we really just want to introduce the simplest term that spoils the Lorentz invariance of the theory, it is enough to consider a term of this form or a term of this form. And actually, these two terms differ by something of the form chi by something that involves the derivative of the Ricci tensor. And we can assume that if we are close to at least a maximally symmetric space, this term is suppressed. Because otherwise, if we didn't make these assumptions, we would have to evaluate that trace for a general background, and we are not able to do this because this would lead to no minimal operators in the trace. So we would have to expand it in perturbation, and we would have again to do perturbation around some maximally symmetric space, for instance, say, or even flat space. And in that case, this term would be suppressed anyway.
There would be a two loop term.
Yeah. So we can just study, say that these two terms are behave in the same way if we at order, at the zero order in this term. And we can study what is the behavior of something like an extra coupling corresponding to term to Einstein-Hilbert plus these terms, and by enforcing the constraint of the norm, by means, for instance, of a Lagrange multiplier field, so that the constraint is imposed dynamically by the equation of motions. And we find that actually in the beta function, well, we find in the first place that the coupling in front of this, say alpha k, has a fixed point at zero, but this is, I mean, we could expect that because this is not related to, this is the only coupling where the chi field occurs, so if for this coupling equals zero, we have obviously, quite obviously, a fixed point. And that the beta function is positive, corresponding to the fact that if we go to low momentum scale, that this coupling is suppressed. And this scenario works even if we impose the constraint by means of a delta function, so adding a Fourier Popov loss. And also, we obtain a differential equation for the G and lambda couplings in this scenario, which display the same behavior of asymptotic safety that can be seen, for instance, in Reuter or Perkashi's papers. So in some sense, we can say that this kind of coupling is not only something which we may want to consider when we deal with modification of Einstein gravity, but is something that still is not reasonable to consider it, even if somebody proved that actually Einstein gravity is, or a modification of Einstein gravity is an asymptotically safe theory. Even if at that point it wouldn't be mandatory to consider this theorem because there would be it wouldn't be necessary to improve the ultraviolet behavior, of course, but nothing would forbid it. So I guess that this is all I wanted to say, and I want also to thank Tim and Razan, who helped me really a lot with this work, and also to thank a couple of people that helped me prepare some stuff before coming here in Italy, and they are Professor Tonin, Bassetto, and Lechner. And if you have any questions.
So did I get you right that this was the only term for the chi fields you introduced?
Yes, this plus the Lagrange multiplier. Because you always have to add, for instance, the Lagrange multiplier times the d mu chi minus 1.
Okay, and the standard kinetic term of the chi field, like box chi, you didn't introduce because you wanted to relate it to
the standard kinetic term is something which is just proportional to the constraint.
Okay, so this is because you want to have some vector fields, but in order to solve one of the
you solve it by taking
a scalar field, okay?
Yeah.
What do you use for Laps? Is Laps constant?
The
constant Laps is the normalization.
Yeah. The constant Laps can be written as this or explicitly enforced by putting a constraint here.
So it is constant.
Yes. This chi field is really, you can think of the chi field really as being a homogeneous club that evolves over.
What was the main result? What was the behavior of lambda?
The behavior of the coupling is that it has a fixed point at zero, and this fixed point at the positive beta function corresponds to the fact that it is negligible, I mean, it is dampened towards the infrared.
And the effect of G Newton and lambda was very small. It gave a small offset. as you would expect whenever you have some matter in addition to pure gravity. I would expect that it changes it because gravity couples to this. But it didn't qualitatively change the flow equation. But you still saw the same pattern as in the original model approach of pure gravity. Or it actually resembled also some of the genocides by Bakachi, who looked at matter. And he saw this offset of the cosmological constant, for example. And then we have some offset
in the ultraviolet.
Yes.
But you still have in the IR, the cosmological constant still run away.
Yes, this is still a runaway in the far infrared again.
And okay, your alpha k, the coupling constant of this kinetic term of your scalar thing, runs away in the IR. So you say in the IR, I do not notice this symmetry breaking coming from this term.
Yeah.
And in the in the ultraviolet.
The thing is that we looked at this. We studied this coupling for simplicity just around the fixed point, in the vicinity of the fixed point. So we cannot really make statement of the large scale behavior of this. We can just say that it is repulsive close to zero, but we don't know if actually it has a fixed point for some finite value.
It's a fixed point. It's a non-trivial fixed point, or it's a Gaussian fixed point.
No, the theory is there is.
What we know is that. The behavior of this as a function of k in the vicinity of zero is something repulsive, but we don't know if it goes like this or like this, giving a stable fixed point here, or does some more complicated stuff, because we just looked at an expansion in power of the factor.
And this was due to calculational difficulties in the trace and not.
And also
by the other guys are around the non-trivial.
Yes, the other
point.
G and lambda are treated non-perturbatively, so you can consider. So you get basically a slight offset of the motor fixed point plus alpha k equals zero is the fixed point of the theory.
So that is really, I mean, if you think, I don't know if I'm able to know this, but this is the alpha coupling, this is say G, and this is the cosmological constant. Here you have, say, the same thing as Reuter does, so something which is attracted in the ultraviolet. And this picture doesn't depend on alpha at the first order for alpha close to zero. This picture is stable with respect to alpha for alpha close to zero, while in this direction you have something which is repulsive. And of course, again, we haven't looked at what can happen if you go to a finite value of alpha. Also, this picture in principle might change, and we haven't considered that. That possibility. The thing is that for higher power of alpha, actually it would be this kind of approach where one will just consider one kind of term, and for instance, just the Einstein-Hilbert truncation is maybe should be really abandoned to include other terms to be really consistent. So the computation of hypothesis would be really much bigger.
So one thing that I don't understand. Well, I never understand hypothesis. Kind of what happens to the lattice? It takes a lot of interest. You know, Einstein-Hilbert lattice is not constant. So you know what I'm saying? Like, how does it go from being a constant function to being whatever it is?
Well, we know what we can say is if there is a regime where you're close to no curvature, maximally symmetric geometric configuration, then this clock field is dynamically developed.
Yeah.
But this is the
This is the only statement.
Well,
I'm not arguing that. It's interesting.
Yeah.
Somehow.
Maybe it is.
Maybe it's not central modifications.
Is it choosing
the
relation to the
intention? Yes.
Yeah,
the thing is, if the calc field, if you can observe it, if you can measure it, then it's funny, it doesn't matter for the experiments. That's the hand waving argument.
Yeah.
It's not
I know.
Fundamental. Yeah, sure. So at high energies you have a preferred gauge, and at low energies you don't have a preferred gauge because you don't have experiments that allow you to fix this gauge. This would be the scenario.
It's interesting.
Because yes, there is of course in this Germani formulation, this is the nice thing about it is that it's fully covariant, so you can. So it's really a choice of gauge if you go into this preferred solution where this is actually the time, where the clock field actually provides the time.
Yeah.
Or you can choose any other gauge.
Yeah, that's true. It's nice in the Germanic paper because it really makes a comparison with what happens in the, for instance, U1 theory, where if you can add a term which, I mean, you can make it. You can break the gauge by adding the gauge fixing term, and you have just the residual gauge. And if you look at the Lagrangian like that, it seems that you just have the residual gauge, but it's just because you really wanted to fix it. And that's the same thing as or our original did, or that you can make in this case by really fixing the time to be the clock, to be given by the clock.
Well, we still need to check calculations.
Yeah, we'll calculation. There is. When you ask me the calculations part,
I would
like
to learn the calculations.
That's the dark matter thing. Like, do you really want the calculations to go away?
Well, maybe if you like dark matter, maybe you can come up with some way that you can cut it slightly enough to give you the right amount of dark matter. I don't know if this is possible with the symmetries that are imposed, because this field obviously has this global translational symmetry. And because it just depends on the derivatives of chi. So it has a global translational symmetry, and then it's even in chi. So that is actually the reason why we have this repulsiveness. Because if we would allow odd powers of chi, or couplings to gravity that don't go through second derivative, don't go through four derivatives, this whole thing would be spoiled.
Thank you.